Huey Lewis and the News, the San Francisco-based pop rock band known for a slew of radio hits for the past 3.5 decades, will make a stop at Tanglewood in Lenox for a matinee show at 2:30 on Sunday afternoon. The band, known for its lively all-American rock anthems with saxophone sounds, has sold over 30 million records. The band's string of hits include Picture This, Do You Believe in Love, Working for a Living, The Heart of Rock and Roll, I Want a New Drug, The Power of Love, Stuck on You, Hip to Be Square, just to name a few. Since he provided the soundtrack to my youth, I'm more than a little excited to welcome Huey Lewis to the roundtable this morning. Nice to have you here, sir.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks.
Very nice.
Very nice intro.
Thank you. I have to say, maybe this means nothing to you. I don't know. You're doing a show at 2:30 in the afternoon at Tanglewood. I think, does that give you a rare opportunity to actually see most of the audience?
Yeah, exactly. Outdoor shows in the summer, you see them for a while until it turns dark.
But, yeah.
And that's a neat thing, by the way, for a performer, I think. Because it's really fun. It's kind of entertaining for us as well, you know. And you can really kind of see whether it's working or not. You know, it's good.
But it doesn't really change the vibe, I would assume.
No. But you can see if you're communicating or not, if you know what I mean. I mean, it's really. Yeah, I enjoy it a lot. I love seeing the crowd. It's great.
Do you have any sense of what you know about the industry? What you know about performance, what you know about your personal career, of what has allowed you to stay relevant, to stay a top draw at places like Tanglewood and SPAC and other arenas over these 3.5 decades without ever skipping a beat?
You mean other than my golden pure voice?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know. It's the songs, I guess. It's the music, you know, and the songs. And they resonate. Interestingly, you know, some of the songs we wrote in our 20s are sort of more appropriate for us older at this age. And because we were sort of a pre-television band by just a minute, by a year or two. And so the idea for us was to write songs that weren't trendy, that were, in fact, more timeless kind of thing. So, and we weren't, we don't have tattoos, for example. I mean, I wouldn't be tattooed head to toe if I thought it would help, you know. But in my day, that wasn't part of the deal. So it was just about the songs. And that's actually served us well in the long run, you know.
And that's interesting because the band got together in the late 70s and you hit your popularity in the early 80s. And
right.
If it was maybe 2 years later, you probably would be all tatted up.
No question. There's no question about it. We would have done whatever it would have taken. The biggest stretch for us as a band actually was to make a record that would have top 40 hits, what they call CHR, Contemporary Hit Radio. And if you think back to the early 80s, it was a radio world entirely. Even MTV, which had just started, their playlist exactly mirrored radio and records' playlist. So they were just playing hits according to the radio. So the object was to even FM, you know, there was no internet, and even FM radio was programmed, CHR. So that was the one avenue to success. That was what we did, and we insisted on producing our own records, something we're proudest of, because we wanted to make those commercial decisions ourselves and be able to live with them over the long term, and it's worked out.
And that producing yourselves, did you learn that after the first album? The first album comes out, it doesn't do terrifically well. The second one you produce yourselves, it kind of breaks even. And then the third one, of course, is Sports, and it goes like wildfire.
Which is interesting, you know, because today, would you have a chance to make three records like that? You know, I mean, today it's that we, I mean, that you could, I mean, mind you, we had a contract that sort of guaranteed us those records, but they could have paid us off to go away and might have done, in modern day. But yeah, and we learned to do it ourselves and we got better, you know, at producing ourselves. And that's really the proudest thing for us. We write most of our songs, but the idea that we sort of literally and figuratively stayed out of LA, we were from San Francisco, big difference, you know? And so, and we kind of did it ourselves. So that was good.
And I've heard you say this, but the style was always, and this was from the very beginning, was to take something very pure, to take something old and to make it modern.
That's true. That's kind of the sort of over angle of it all. Interestingly, you know, Sports, which was our breakthrough record, was 30 years old 2 years ago, and we toured and played the record from back to front. Yeah. So I had to, retrospective, had occasion to look back and did interviews and so on. And I'm not really a backward-looking guy, but I had to for a while. And what I realized is that Sports record is a record of its time, and that is a collection of singles. We were aiming each one of those songs at radio, but we didn't want to repeat ourselves. So there's a ballad that's kind of a hit. There's a rocker that's kind of a hit. There's kind of a little bluesy thing that's kind of, you know, and so that was what that was. And I think our work since holds together more as complete albums and pieces, but, you know, there's no accounting for popular taste.
Speaking of popular taste, you had the crowds, you had people buying your albums, your music was all over the radio, and yet it seems you never got the critical success that other artists did. Is that a fair assessment?
That may be true. I mean, we were College Band of the Year for 2 years before we had our video breakthrough before Sports. But, you know, you have to understand that there was a lot. I mean, we were on television a lot, you know, from 83 through 87.
Right.
And we were on the cover of Rolling Stone twice. And, you know, it was a lot of attention. We sold a lot of records. That's a tough light, I think. And critics' job is to tout people who are less popular, for good reason, arguably, you know, for good reason. So, yeah, have we had we're seen kind of as a pop band in America for the most part, you know, whereas in Europe, we're not. We haven't had near as many hits, and they see us, and the audiences are smaller, but they like us for the right reasons. They see us as a real kind of rhythm and blues band, you know, or kind of beach music band.
Tell us how Back to the Future came about. How were you approached to do that? And did you have any idea that that would be such a launching pad?
No idea it would be a launching pad. It came together when Steven Spielberg, Bob Zemeckis, Bob Gale, and Neil Kenton asked to take a meeting and said that we had a meeting with them over at Amblin in L.A. And they said that they had written this film and the lead character was a guy called Marty McFly, and his favorite band would be Huey Lewis in the News. And I thought, wow, that's flattering. And they said, well, how would you like to write a song for the film? I said, well, first of all, I don't fancy writing a song called Back to the Future. And they said, no, we don't care. We don't care what it's called. I said, oh, okay, well, you know, don't know how to write for film. And they didn't have anything shot yet anyway. I said, but I'll just send you the next thing we write. And that was Power of Love.
A again, the longevity of that. Now you have a music industry where commercials can launch an artist. Obviously, television launch an artist.
Right.
You know, you were already well established, but still, it didn't hurt, did it?
Well, no. It was what it really did for us. It was international. It was our first big international hit. We had hits and sort of hits, you know, in Britain a little bit and so on. But this was a big hit everywhere. So it was a big, and it enabled us to really tour the world. And it remains our biggest hit. I mean, it's interesting to know, because we just had the 25 year retrospective with Zemeckis and everything. And he points out that when the week the movie was premiered, the Power of Love was already number one. Power of Love had been released 8 weeks prior to the premiere of the film. Wow. And which is how long it takes to establish a tune, to put it up in the charts where it's getting constant airplay. And so the week the movie premiered, Power of Love was number one in radio records. And so, you know, that what a great launching pad that was. And then it worked in reverse for us when the movie was such a big hit.
I've heard you talk about this, and I find it interesting. Tell me about "Hip to Be Square." I believe the quote attributed to you is that you regret that you didn't do the song in the third person.
Well, it was meant to articulate a phenomenon better articulated in a book that I read called "Bobos in Paradise."
Yes,
which postulates that today's ruling classes are bourgeois bohemians. It's about people who are dropping back in, you know what I mean? I thought of it in the third person. He used to be a renegade. He used to fool around. And then I thought it would be even funnier if I told it on myself, you know? Which a lot of people understood, but some people, I think, took it as some kind of an anthem for square people, you know? So, but it wasn't meant to be an anthem for square. Now I sing it as, I'm too hip to be square.
Oh, is that you've changed it?
I've changed it again.
Sure,
yeah.
That's good. When you took some time off and then you started recording again, so are you going to do more of that? Is that still very much a part of the DNA of the band?
I tell you, we have four things recorded, and I got another thing we're birthing now that's, I think, really good. And it's not that we haven't written, so that's like five things. That passes for wildly prolific on our stage, you know that. And it's not that we haven't written songs in a while, and you know, in the last decade, but we haven't really written any good ones. And these are really good ones, I think. We've had a little bit of a creative explosion, and we're excited about it. We're playing a couple of them, and we've cut four of them, and going to cut a fifth, and then figure out how to drop them on the public, you know.
Do you have, can you overthink it as far as, we have the string of hits. I mean, I read just like a partial list in the introduction, but can you overthink it and say, oh, well, all right, this is what was popular. Do we try to replicate that in any way? Do we learn anything from that we can worry about? Or is it just, we'll do the music, and if they like it, great.
Yeah, you know, it all starts with a song, right? And if you're trying to write an original song, then the most important thing is to figure out what the song's about. What is this song about? You know, and so because otherwise it's really not worthwhile. A song needs to be about something that's passionate for you, something that you're committed to. You know, when the guy says, "I'm going to Kansas City," they got crazy little women there, and I'm going to get me one. We have to believe he's going to Kansas City. He knows about the crazy little women, and he wants to get him one. You know, and so you got to. It's got to be true for you, and it's got to go. And once you figure out what it's about, and the song now musically, how does it belong? And at this point, the song begins to dictate how it wants to be produced, if you will. Although that's not to say you can't say, look, let's take a kind of more contemporary approach to this one, or let's take a more sort of retro approach to it or something, you know, but songs really lend themselves to certain kinds of treatments. And I'm a firm believer that they kind of produce themselves, you know.
I said it at the beginning, and I think it's true for a lot of people my age. But obviously, and as you say, you were on TV a lot, and very much a part of that era of the 80s and early 90s. And was that a good time to be an artist?
Yeah, I mean, anytime's good. You know, for us, the original thing was you finally figure out it's about playing music and having people show up. You know, that's what you want in life.
Right.
If you love to play music,
sure.
You want a career. That's what you want. I mean, it isn't about the number of records you sell or any of that other stuff. Or, you know, why did you do it? Oh, to get girls or to get rich or to be a star or any of that stuff. It's really about playing music for a living. And so, and you figure that out eventually or you quit, you know, and if you love doing it, that's what it ends up being about. So, you know, in the beginning, you have to do all kinds of stuff. You know, Jake Revere used to call it infiltrate and double cross, you know, because there, in my day, there was only one avenue to success. Now, and that's radio. Now there's like you say, there's a million avenues to success. But I think once you pay the bills, you kind of have to now make creative choices, you know, and that sort of feeds your soul a little bit and it makes it more fun.
In your creative choices, what are you proudest about?
Well, I'm proudest that we've done it ourselves. We've written most of our own songs, produced most of our own stuff. And I think our records continue, our work continues to improve with every single record, I think, even though we only have 12 of them or whatever there are. But, you know, Sports was our third record, and I think we continue to improve. And that's it. And you know, we're stuck with the songs. So they're kind of almost gifts, if you will, somehow. And now, funnily enough, at this ripe old age, I think we got a couple good songs, a few more than a couple, four or five.
You know, I was just driving. I had a road trip from New York to Ocean City, Maryland. And I put in Four Chords in several years ago. Man, that's
right.
A great album.
Right, cool. Glad you like it. I did, and it was really fun to do. And I'll tell you, a record that was super fun to do was Soulsville, which is really our last record.
Yeah.
And we did that in Memphis, cut it live with the horn section. We used two studios, put the horn section in B, and we were in legendary A, where you know, the staple singers cut. With John Fry, who was still alive and was there. I mean, it was really cool, man. And, you know, that was the most fun record we ever made. So,
going back to some good old stuff.
Yeah.
Huey Lewis, great to spend some time with you. Thank you very much. Great to have you in town, too.
Thanks, Joe. Good
great pleasure. You. Thank you. Again, Huey Lewis will be at Tanglewood Sunday afternoon at 2:30 in the shed at Tanglewood in Lenox, Massachusetts. Tanglewood.org for more information. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.